but I'd like to welcome you all to the March 6th House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry, and thank all of you for coming today. Today we have one agenda item, and that is a public hearing on House Bill 3003. And members, before we begin that, to share with you, our Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, has been taken to the hospital. We're not sure why, so we're waiting for an update and trying to find out, ascertain what her condition is and so forth. So with that, the Chair will open a public hearing on House Bill 3003. Ray, would you read us a staff measure summary of this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3003 adds the historic Columbia River Highway and McKenzie Highway to the list of highways designated as scenic for the purposes of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. It renames state highways to read Oregon routes in statute consistent with state highway maps and changes certain state highways to read United States routes, thereby reflecting the correct highway designation. Chapter 919 Oregon Laws 1991 defines a visually sensitive corridor as forest land located within the area extending 150 feet measured on the slope from the outermost right-of-way boundary of a scenic highway referred to in statute. Those same laws under its subchapter 17 list those highways designated as scenic for the purposes of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. Neither the historic Columbia River Highway nor the McKenzie Highway were included in the original list of scenic highways. Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ray. We appreciate that. The Chair would like to call forward the...
Ray Wilkerson.
Okay. You...
I'll go second.
All right. Chair would like to call Ray Wilkerson, the Oregon Forest Industries Council, if you'd come forward, Ray. Appreciate it.
I'm going to join.
Would you? Welcome, Ray, and welcome, Representative King, for the record.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ray Wilkerson of the Oregon Forest Industries Council, and appreciate your attention to this bill. Before I talk specifically about the bill, a little bit of background about this statute. This was an addition. The specific part of the law that this bill amends was an addition to the Forest Practices Act that was enacted in 1991 by the legislature through a bill that was brought to the legislature by OFIC, and it was a comprehensive rewrite of the Forest Practices Act. We had preceded the 91 session by internally at OFIC forming what we called a 1990s committee, and at that time we were looking at a rapid shutdown of the federal forest. The controversy over the spotted owl was erupting, and things were looking very grim for the timber industry, frankly. And we, as private landowners, decided we needed to kind of get back and talk to among ourselves and figure out what do we need to do to survive and continue to stay in business in the climate we were in 1990. So we met for over a year and talked to all kinds of different people and came out with a major piece of legislation that we brought to the legislature, and it basically tightened up practices on private forest land to meet what we believed in some cases were legitimate public concerns, and in other cases were concerns the public had that we didn't necessarily agree with, but the reality was we had to deal with them. So we did things such as limit the size of clear cuts, the spacing of clear cuts, require certain trees to be left in clear cuts. There's no such thing as a pure clear cut anymore. You have to leave at least a few wildlife trees, even if you're clear cutting. We paved the way for major new buffer standards on streams, and we included in our bill we brought forward that the legislature passed this section, which basically, in a very limited fashion, authorizes the Board of Forestry to regulate for the purposes of, or actually establishes the statute standards that restrict practices for the purpose of visual protection or scenic protection. Now, this one, clearly there's no resource issue. We're not protecting wildlife or water quality, but it is a response. It was our view, a response to public concern. Some of our practices are visually unattractive, and that's just the reality of it, and it makes sense for us to the extent we can soften the visual image, it makes sense to do it, and in our view, the Federal Forest Practices Act is the way to do that. So that was our thinking. That's the background of this bill. The standards themselves on scenic buffers are very, very limited. First of all, they're limited because they're written into the law. They're not it's not a regulatory administrative rule sort of thing. The actual standards are in the law, so they can't be changed except by the legislature. The highways that these buffers apply to are written into the law, so that can't be changed except by the legislature, which is what House Bill 3003 is all about. There's no permanent set-asides in this program. It's a little bit complicated, but the back of the bill basically lays out the current law and how this works. It's kind of a inner zone, outer zone buffer requirement. You can harvest the trees behind and leave the ones right by the road, or you can do the opposite, and then you have to wait until the ones you harvested grow up to a certain height, get a certain size, and then you can harvest the ones that you left initially. So there's nothing permanent set aside here, but it does provide a visual screen to clear cuts, basically. There's also an exemption for very small parcels just because of the administrative cost, which kind of gets to House Bill 3003, despite the bold print on the front of the bill, which looks like we're changing a lot of highway designations, this bill only really adds two segments of highways. The reason the existing ones are broken out again in bold print is because, and we didn't notice this for 10 years, nobody did, but initially, as you see in line 8 and 9, there's a whole bunch of highways listed as state highways, some of which are federal highways. So to be accurate, Legislative Council has divided these into federal and state highways, and that's why they're all relisted. But the ones that are added are Highway 242, which is the old McKenzie Highway, Scenic Highway, the one that's closed during the wintertime, and the historic Columbia River Highway. Now, the Forestry Department has prepared some maps that I think you have that show exactly where these highways are. A key element, and the Forestry Department will also testify to this, is that there's very little private land on either one of these segments. That's probably why they were omitted in the first place when we were coming up with this list of where should these rules apply, and probably looked at those and said, well, that's mostly federal land, so we really don't need to deal with it. The reason, and Representative King will speak to this, I'm sure, the reason this came to our attention now, 10 years later, is there was an operation in an area on the McKenzie Highway that caused quite a bit of controversy a little over a year ago, and the question was asked by the media coverage that was received, well, why wasn't that on the list? And the answer is that's a good question, it ought to be. So that's really what precipitated this legislation. Okay. The other one is the old Columbia River Highway, historic highway. The Forestry Department's got a handout that I just saw a few minutes ago talking about the history of that highway. I think I have copies for it. It's actually the first modern highway in the Pacific Northwest. It was originally Highway 30, I think, but the older portion now is the portion that runs basically through the Columbia Gorge scenic area from Troutdale to the Dalles. So that's what we're talking about here. I guess, kind of to sum up, Mr. Chairman, OFIC brought this program to the legislature 10 years ago. We supported it then. We support it now. We believe that in a very limited sense that this statute requires that these restrictions are not unreasonable and they make sense in dealing with some public concerns. And given that, we certainly ought to include two of the most scenic highways in the state. And if this is a good program, then the Columbia River Gorge ought to be included, and the McKenzie Highway ought to be included. And so that's really what brought us to ask that this bill be introduced.
All right. Well, thank you, Ray. I appreciate that. Certainly sheds a little more light on this issue. Do you have questions of Ray? Hearing none, thank you. And Al.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Al King, State Representative, District 44. And I want to say that I appreciate Oregon Forest Industries Council and Mr. Wilkerson bringing this bill to my attention, to be introduced. I did have, some significant constituent complaints when the logging operation occurred up on Highway 42, the McKenzie Pass. And there is a very short section of private land before you get, into the National Forest. There are actually 242, if you notice the map, is pretty unique in that right-of-way is the only thing that separates the Mount Washington Wilderness and the Three Sisters Wilderness. So it's virtually a wilderness road and has some unique parts. And when there was a logging operation on some of that private land there, then of course there's a hue and a cry, the TV cameras zoom up there, and so you're involved, and so then the question was, well, why wasn't in this, and it looks like it was an oversight, I think was what happened in the first place, and clearly it made sense to come back at this time and include them. Also want to say that I'm very thankful that the operator, when he did the clear cut, what he was doing was he had bought some land that was zoned for commercial activity. It wasn't commercial forest. And they had a small mobile home park there, and it really was kind of run down. And what he did was he went in and then did the harvest, and then immediately scarified, and then by the time I got there, it was almost a park. And within another 45 days or so, the grass was going to be planted, and it was going to look gorgeous. So thank goodness we weren't looking at a circumstance where there was going to be an ugly logging unit, that all the tourists would be going by, for several seasons until we got, higher timber there. So really that situation in terms of what happened, I think has about as good an outcome, as you could in those circumstances. But when we take a look at the policy that's a part of this act, we see that it really is well thought out, that it does not take the land out of production. Someone can still harvest their land. But what happens is they have a choice. They can cut trees in the front and still have trees in the back, and then when the trees in the front grow to replace it, then they can cut the trees in the back, or vice versa. They can go either way in that. At the same time, there certainly is encouragement to retain those large trees. But if we're encouraging those private landowners to grow those large trees, we need to give them some liability waiver in case one of those big trees comes down and someone was injured as a part of the policy that we were encouraging. So we are giving them some hold harmless in that process. And so these are just trophy highways. It wasn't over.
Thank you. What happens when, what practical effect does it have on, say, a logging operation when you designate a highway scenic? How does that change how you do business there?
Mr. Chairman, it really shouldn't, because very much at all in terms of operationally, because by definition you've got an existing road, so it's not like you're going to have to do a lot of road building if your unit is adjacent to a paved road. So it would just be a matter of, in terms of leaving the buffer would be the only impact. It would, in terms of your operation, you wouldn't have to, build more road or otherwise, run your cables or your spar poles or anything in any different configuration than you would have otherwise. So
it basically means just buffer strips.
Yes.
More than anything else. Okay.
And it's fairly narrow, and again, it's not permanent.
Right. I had a question for you in regards to it's pretty clear about the map in regards to State Highway 100, the Columbia Gorge. But with route, we're only talking about route 242, and we're not talking about 126, which is kind of part of 242 in some places.
126 is in the previous list of highways.
It is.
Included,
so it's already designated wherever there's a state highway named 126. So that goes clear into Prineville, doesn't it? I think I saw on a map earlier today that it does, because that's how I get to my mom's house. So I
this is the original list.
But it is. Okay.
I think there was one added in the 94 or 95 session, but other than that, this was a list that was adopted by the 91 legislature.
Okay.
And 126 was on it at the time.
How many landowners? You referenced there were some landowners along
42.
Yeah.
Boy, it's just a very short period. It's like a mile or two, from 126 along 242 to where the gate is that they would close off the winter time. It's a very short way.
So we're really not talking about affecting hardly any landowners either here?
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Forestry will have some very precise information for you on that.
All right.
There is a small community there, and you can't see them all, but there might be like 30 or 40 folks that live there, and there might be 10 parcels or so.
Okay. Do you have any questions? Well, hearing none, gentlemen, thank you both very much. Appreciate it. At this time, the chair has a practice of calling forward individuals who have traveled more than 100 miles, and we do have someone here. So as a matter of courtesy to them, we try to bump them up in the process. So the chair would like to call Patricia Gainsforth. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Great.
And I'm about 130 miles from Central Oregon.
You are.
And
well,
so this is kind of a near and dear subject.
Welcome, Patricia. For the record, state your name.
This is Patricia Gainsforth, Bend, Oregon. And I saw this and was interested in it because I've been in Central Oregon most of my life, and when we lost the timber industry as one of our main economic forces, we became a tourist industry sort of place, as you all know, going to your mother's house. And so over the years, it has really made a difference to see how those highways were treated. And so I was very much in favor of this. And we had something happen in Bend about 20 years ago that really focused my attention on this. There was a land use tassel over a 20-acre parcel right south of town. And the man wanted to become commercial, and the land use plan didn't allow that. And he went and cut and left lay about 20 acres of juniper at the south boundary of Bend. And it was one of the most heartbreaking things. And, of course, everybody that drove into town said, "What are you doing out there?" And that obviously most of the people of Bend were not very proud of it. So I'm glad to see something like this come forward. Those things that happen, unfortunately, then there's some management of them, and I think this is a good addition.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. We have a question.
Yes.
Ms. Smith.
Ms. Gainsforth, are you a landowner? Are you a timber landowner?
I am.
Where do you own timberland?
Oh, do I hold timberland? No, I don't. Well, that's a hard question. I own no juniper land, or no pine land. I own some juniper land.
Oh, okay.
So is that timberland? That doesn't in my world. They cut them over there. They cut them over there. Okay, I'm back.
Thank you.
But I have been on the National Forest Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Patricia. I appreciate you coming. I think we have some other folks who would like to testify. Department of Forestry is here. If you'd be willing to come forward, gentlemen. Welcome. State your name for the record, please.
Chair Krupp and members of the committee, my name is Ted Lawrence. I'm the Forest Practices Program Director. I have with me Greg Klein, the Forest Practices Policy Unit Manager, and Greg's the person that put together the maps. I think that Highway 242 issue has been described well. Would make the point to clarify things. Actually, the parcel that was the controversy this past summer was really more about a land use change that happened to go through a forest operation first. As you can see from the map, there are two private parcels that are in the lighter color on the west side of the highway. And then as you get towards Sisters, there are some very few acres of private land right next to Sisters, which is mainly llama ranch as opposed to forest land. So the impact there in reality is fairly limited, but I think it's in terms of the policy consistent to include those little bit of private forest lands within the designation. Columbia Gorge situation is a little more complex, and we haven't completed all analysis in terms of the ownership impacts there. But it would make the point that within the gorge scenic area, there's two designations of lands. The first is what they call the SMA, or Special Management Area, and within that portion, I'm not sure where it begins and ends, but it's the central part of the area. Basically, the Gorge Act regulations regulate the Forest Practices, not the Forest Practices Act, and their standards are quite a bit different than what the Act might require. So where this designation would have an impact is within the general management area, or the area where, under the Gorge Act, if forest practices are allowed, then it's regulated only by the Forest Practices Act. And so I'm not quite sure how many acres are within the general management area. They are on the far east end towards Mosier and the Dalles, and on the far west end towards Troutdale. On the east end, I would suspect most of that is not timberland. It may be forest land, but it's probably not timberland. On the west end, I would suspect it's probably more in the timberland classification. We don't yet have an idea of how many total acres. But it does, the current act exempts parcels that are 5 acres and less in size from the requirement.
The Columbia Gorge Act, you're saying?
No, the current scenic highway.
Scenic highway
requirement.
Okay.
Exempts parcels that are 5 acres and less in size.
Okay.
So those are the maps that we have, and if you'd like us to do further analysis of how many parcels, okay, Greg does have some parcels here.
Oh, great. Thank you. State your name.
Mr. Chair, Greg Klein with the Department of Forestry. We did a quick analysis, looked at the lineal distance that the road would cross private land or non-federal land for the historical Columbia River Highway. That turns out to be about approximately 33 miles. If you do a quick calculation, roughly that is 1,200 acres that would be affected by the bill. For the Route 242, it's just a small segment, approximately 11 acres would be affected.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear him.
Could you restate that and pull the microphone a little closer there? Thank you, Greg.
For the historic Columbia River Highway, approximately 33 miles would pass through non-federal land, and that would affect approximately 1,200 acres. For the Route 242, approximately 11 acres would be affected by the bill.
Okay. I have a question for a gentleman. How well, what's been ODF's experience in administering scenic highways? How's that worked for you? I mean, that's bound to be a complicated issue.
It has, Chair Krupp, members of the committee. Basically, the requirements for the scenic highway protection apply along these highways regardless of zoning. So our experience has been on really commercial timberland, there aren't any conflicts that really most forest landowners can implement the requirements without a whole lot of change in their operations. There are some safety issues we have to consider, and some areas are more prone to wind throw than others, so we look at that with the Department of Transportation and address that in considering what trees to leave or when not to leave them. But within what I'd call the urbanized areas, as an example, Highway 101 is a classic where you've got, say, around Tillamook, Cannon Beach, a fair amount of development with Highway 101, and those requirements also apply there, and that creates a whole host of conflicts. And there we have quite a struggle. Because the highways are often linear features that also have a lot of utilities, power lines, and phone lines along those stretches of road, it creates a lot of conflicts in dealing with those, and also wind throw is a real problem. So we often end up either modifying the rules or waiving the requirements in those urbanized areas, or end up being in conflict with the landowners and or the folks who would like to have scenic buffers. So it's a no-win situation in that particular area for us. That's where we really struggled. A fair amount of time and energy spent on those particular areas.
And that's where some of these controversial situations arise from?
I could recall a number of them in Tillamook County, Clatsop County, where we've either allowed the buffer to be harvested and people didn't like it, or we required the buffer to be left and it blew down the power lines and people didn't like us for requiring the buffer to be left. In one case, we had some trees hit a car, but landowners that are following the requirements of the scenic highway prescriptions are exempt from liability. So it's really an issue more with our administration rather than liability for the landowner. But it does create an inherent set of conflicts in the urbanized rural residential type areas, and that's been a consistent struggle for us.
Representative Smith, your question.
I have some concerns about this. What further restrictions on ownership rights will this highway impose? You haven't talked about it from that point of view, I don't believe.
Representative Assistant members of the committee, basically the requirements that this would impose are the same requirements that all other scenic highways would have. So as Ray Wilson of OFIC described, it requires a temporary retention of timber within a strip along the highway, and there's a choice of how that's retained. It can either be left within the inner half or the outer half of the buffer, which is up to 300 feet wide, and they can choose to retain the inner half, and at some point in time when they have trees that are 10 foot or tall beyond that inner half, then they can harvest the inner half of the trees, or they can flip that approach around, harvest the inner half, plant that, get 10 foot tall trees, and then harvest the outer half. So it's neither or approach. So it's a temporary restriction on harvest. It does allow some thinning in that area.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
So are private landowners going to be compensated for the temporary hardship?
Under the current requirement, they are not.
Why not?
Representative Smith, currently the legislature has not directed us to do so.
You said, and I'm not sure if I got this right, it's why I wrote it down. I'll follow up. ODF and W has not completed all analysis of land ownerships. Is that along the Columbia?
Correct. We do not, Representative Smith, do not have the precise figure on how it put the total private land ownership would be within the Columbia Highway segment in the context of what's forest land or what's not forest land.
Have you, although you've been able to analyze what's private land and what is not private land?
That's correct. There's 33 miles of private land along that segment that was proposed.
And you don't think that these private landowners are going to be upset over the taking of their land without compensation?
I would suspect some of them would be. I would suspect some of them are already doing this. But again, that's your policy call on whether or not you think this highway is appropriately designated or not.
Yeah, my opinion is private. Highway is not appropriately designated in lieu of the fact that private landowners have had their lands, and especially forest lands, taken and taken and taken by governments without compensation, and that's why we had Measure 7. And I'm a bit appalled and I'm a bit angered by the fact you have brought this here today.
Excuse me.
And if it goes to the floor, I will speak very much
against it. The Department of Forestry is not proposing this bill here, describing the consequences of it. This bill was proposed by the forest industry.
Yeah, either way.
Okay.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions are along a similar vein, but I first want to thank you for referring to any part of Tillamook County as urban. I was quite impressed with that, actually. If this were to pass, what sort of a process would you go through as far as the private landowners? I'm concerned about them as well. And would it be done prior to our passage of this or after the fact?
Representative Hobson, members of the committee, it can be done either way. Basically, if this becomes a statutory requirement, the statute itself would be the notification of landowners, but the process that we deal with, when we get a notification for an operation, that would be the time when we would let landowners know they would have to comply with this particular set of rules and laws. So that's the way we've handled it so far. There's any number of ways that folks could be notified of this if you chose to do something.
Thank you. That answers it. Thanks.
Any additional questions? Well, gentlemen, I want to go back to the issue of the problems you've had in around urban areas, because that kind of concerns me in a lot of ways, because it sounds like it's not only controversial, but it sounds like it takes a lot of your staff time to deal with it. And I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but and maybe Ray can answer this later, but that wasn't the original intention of the Forest Practices Act, was it, in terms of including scenic highways portion, was to create, or to have these kinds of conflicts develop that create so much staff issues.
Right. Chair Krupp and members of the committee, I think when the original bill was passed in 91, the intent was to provide a fairly limited mechanism. I don't think they thought in terms of how it extended into, quote, more developed forest lands. There was no policy statement adopted with the scenic highway bills at that point in time. And I recall correctly, back in 95 was when we actually inserted the current policy language, which is state something along the lines of the purpose of designated scenic highways to provide a limited mechanism that maintains roadside trees the enjoyment of the motoring public while traveling through forest land, consistent with ORS 527-630 safety and other practical considerations. That was put in there at our request dominantly to help us address some of the conflicts that came out of the bill. And another section basically says alternate plans that modify or waive the requirements of the section may be approved when in the judgment of the state forester circumstances exist, such as modification waivers necessary to maintain motorist safety, protect improvements such as dwelling and bridges, protect forest health, or provide additional scenic benefits, as exposed or distant vistas, trees that are otherwise not required to be retained. So they put a whole bunch of caveats, but it really never got, it does provide us the flexibility, but it really never got to the basic conflict that comes with those urbanized areas, notwithstanding Tillamook's perception there is a fair amount of urbanization there, particularly on 101, and you know, you get a 5-acre or larger parcel where somebody's got to retain this buffer, and in many cases in an urban growth boundary or rural residential zone, their purpose is not for forest management. They're
right.
To put a house on it.
Wouldn't think so.
And you require them to leave a buffer, and it thwarts that process. So from our experience, does the purpose, the policy that you're trying to achieve here, is it being achieved within those particular zones? Probably not. And generally, we'd work to waive and modify those, but that's fairly lengthy. And
well, if you're, it seems to me that if you're waiving a lot of those requirements anyway in the process, because of it isn't the goal of the issue within urban growth boundaries and rural residential, then why don't we just exempt you from doing that?
That would by
law. I mean,
Chair Krupp and members of the committee, I think that would be a appropriate policy choice to consider by the committee. It would certainly save us time, and it puts us out of a darned if you do, darned if you're not, don't situation, where if we require trees and they fall down in some of these improvements, then we're wrong. We allow the trees to be cut, and we're also wrong because we didn't provide scenic protection. So it works either way there. We're kind of the loser, because whatever we choose is not going to be very good in somebody's opinion. And clearly, I think from the policy statement, I think, you know, it's up to you to interpret whether or not what we're trying to do within urbanized areas is consistent with this. I would argue there's some reason to think maybe it's not.
Well, how would we, if we did something like that, and I'm just kind of free thinking here, what would we change the overall direction of the forest? I don't see that we would, but what creation or problems would we create by exempting that from, let's just say, urban growth boundaries and maybe designated rural residential areas, where it's clear that there's a conflict here? What would we create in terms of problems?
Chair Krupp, members, Penny, I don't think you'd create any problems for the Department of Forestry's perspective. It certainly get us out of an area of inherent conflict. I guess the policy choice is whether that is inconsistent with the original policy. I think, you know, my interpretation is it's not. And I think in the construct of the current statute, it'd be fairly easy to add those exemptions to the current exemption, which is the last part of the statute that says harvest and single ownerships less than 5 acres in size are exempt from the section. We could basically add harvests on ownerships within urban growth boundaries or rural residential zones are also exempt. Give you an example of how strange the construct of the current act is. I-5, as it runs through Albany, would require a scenic buffer. You know, we would probably waive that, given the dilemmas there. But again, it creates some basic conflicts, and I'm not sure that was the legislature's intent to require that scenic buffers be left along the interstate highway in Albany or Salem or Portland. Again, there aren't that many trees there to begin with, but conflicts do happen there.
So from your perspective, if we made an exemption like that, as naming an amendment to this piece of legislation, it wouldn't be inconsistent with what you're already doing. It would just save you the hassle and everybody else the hassle, and it just make it in statute, codified.
I think that would be fairly correct. Again, I caution, we do require in some cases that buffers be left in those areas, but again, that sometimes results in some unintended negative consequences that we have to deal with later on. but in terms of the policy, I think it would be very consistent to make that change.
Okay. Do we have additional questions, members? Hearing none, thank you, gentlemen. I do appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us here today.
Thank you, Mr.
President. Is there anyone left who'd like to testify on this legislation? We have Christina McNitt from the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Welcome, Christina, for the record.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is a statewide trade association of small landowners who own 5,000 acres or less. I don't have a position here today on this bill. I'm in an uncomfortable position. There was no prior communication about this bill between the sponsor and my association. It came out a couple days ago, and so we're not exactly sure what the full scope of the bill is at this point. The first opportunity OSWA members had to discuss it was this morning, and we have a regular legislative committee group every Tuesday morning. Questions were what the scope of the bill is to determine how many acres are affected, how many private landowners are affected. Basically, this bill would apply to any landowner who has 5 acres or less, and it would require, if you're within the scenic area, that you set aside a buffer of 300 feet, within which, divided in half, two parcels of 150 feet. So you can harvest the first 150 feet and leave the second, or vice versa, and you can only harvest the second piece after the trees are 10 feet tall. You also have additional regulations and requirements about when you have to reforest the portion that you did harvest. You have to clean up the slash, and you have less time to invest in that property. I understand from talking to the OSWA members this morning that there have been a couple attempts to designate the Columbia River Highway as scenic, but I also understand that those attempts were prior to its current designation. What I don't understand the ramifications of yet, and we'll need to do some research, is what the current designation of the highway does to those landowners, and this may, in fact, be a moot point. So it may not be an additional regulation. I think that that is all of my comments. I'm sorry, I don't have anything written, and I'm not that prepared, but I did just want to report that we didn't have any prior coordination, and so we're just still trying to figure out what the true ramifications are to small landowners.
Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Ms. McNitt, if I understood you saying it may not be additional regulation, so would you not share the same concern that Representative Smith had about the takings issue in that case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I think that Representative Smith's comments were really relevant. What I guess I'm trying to say is that I think the Columbia River Gorge Highway has some sort of federal designation which preempts our authority to really do anything or require. I think that if we called it a scenic highway, that it really doesn't do anything more than what the federal government has already done. Is that still a taking? Yes, it is a taking. And I think it's all perspective of landowners. And I do think that, you know, when you add these cumulative effects, that's why you have the public feeling towards compensation for regulatory takings that brought Measure 7.
No additional questions? Christina, would you have a problem with the concept of exempting the urban growth boundaries and rural residential areas from the scenic highways portion of the Forest Practices Act? Does that make sense to you in regards to the relevancy of the previous conversation we've had with ODF?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee members, I think that that would be viewed favorably by the Oregon Small Woodlands Association and the OSWA members, but it does beg the question why we have the regulation to begin with. If the point was to preserve scenic corridors and to have a certain image attached to forest harvest operations, then when you get closer to urban areas and you allow these types of operations to occur, I guess I don't understand the consistency of the policy at that point. But we would be favorable to not applying that to those areas.
All right. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify? All right. Ray, since we're talking about this whole issue of exempting, and you guys are the author of this thing, if you could give me your thoughts on that, because I'm thinking that's maybe a direction the chair would like to go in terms of introducing an amendment. I want to make sure that we're keeping within the intent, because you're the author of this legislation.
Right. Thank you for the opportunity again, Ray Wilkerson, Mr. Chairman. We've obviously this thing has been on the books for 10 years, and so we're familiar with some of the difficulties the department has had in administering the program in these kinds of areas. And what you're suggesting, I think, would not do damage to the overall intent of this program, and would save both landowners and the department a lot of headaches. And I think it would be would do no harm, and would be a overall benefit to the program. So we would not have any problem at all with amending this bill along those lines.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, members, any additional comments at this time? The chair is not going to go to a work session because he thinks he's got the bright idea for a amendment here. So we will schedule this for work session later. And at that point, our public hearing on House Bill 3033 is closed, and we are adjourned.